Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
This is a Frank podcast.
Kia ora, everybody, and welcome to this latest episode of Wellington Paranormal, the podcast, with me, Mike Minogue.
And also me, Karen O'Leary.
G'day, mate.
Yeah, g'day.
What did you get up to last night?
I stayed at my good friend Jodie Rimmer's house.
Yeah.
And we watched a bit of cricket and then watched Love on the Spectrum, which I love that show.
Is that? No, no. There used to be another show called The Undateables.
Oh, yeah, it's not like that one.
And that was a bit mean-spirited.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, this is...
The fact that they even called it that and then were like, who are these people that will never ever be able to get a date? Let's put them on a TV show.
Yeah, I felt the vibe was the same. Is it different for Love on the Spectrum?
Love on the Spectrum is just people that are obviously on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Or have a variety of diverse needs.
Sure.
And they've like probably never been on a date before and they get matched up and go on dates and it's just lovely.
But is it lovely or is it, you know, inverted commas, funny?
No.
Well, I'm asking you.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you shush, then I'll tell you the answer. You ask me something.
But you said no straight away.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's
really all lovely. There's no funny moments.
It's touching. The people on it are humorous.
Yes.
But because they're funny people.
Right, good.
And
okay.
They're just a joy to watch. And,
all right.
You know?
I'll give it a go.
Give it a go. I bet you it'll make you cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine with crying. I just don't. Yeah.
But do you love love?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to be a party to everybody's falling in love.
It's not a party,
you know what I mean?
It's just a TV show.
Yeah, I know. I don't need to be a viewer for everybody's relationship. It's why I don't watch.
Well, it's not everybody. It's just like six
it's
people.
Why I don't. Well, it's a vague description. It's why I don't watch Love Island or.
That's a very different kettle of fish. Because that's just.
Well, I don't know because I haven't
seen
it.
It's just like watching a train crash.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called a train wreck, isn't it?
Or yeah,
a train
same
crash.
Thing. Yeah.
I went to Tangiwai.
You can't say that after Tangiwai. I
went there just the other day on the way back from the Whanganui River.
Did you? How was it?
Very moving and obviously very tragic.
Right. For our foreign listeners, do you want to go through one of our great national tragedies?
Yes, on Christmas Eve in 1956, was it? I'll check that.
For some reason, I feel like it was the same year. And
was
I don't.
It 63?
I don't know. 50, it was definitely 50s. I felt like it might have been the same
56.
Year as the coronation.
Fact check that. Tim's should be doing it right now. That's
fact
what
check.
Jake would be doing, but Tim's
be insert
over
it
there.
Later.
And yes, on the there was Mount Ruapehu.
Yes.
Had some activity, and then a lahar burst out of its things and swept down the river.
And what a word.
Lahar. Mm-hmm. It's a good word, but it wasn't good for the train.
No, it wasn't the word that was the issue so much as the lava.
Well, it's all the rocks, volcanic rocks and stuff, spewed out, then broke the bridge just before the Christmas Eve train from Wellington to Auckland went across the bridge. So some guy got out of his car and flashed his torch at the train. The driver slammed the brakes on too late, too heavy, too big. The front five carriages fell off into the river below. And then the sixth carriage dangled and then that broke off too.
Yeah, and am I also right in my memory? Because we've made a... like every tragedy or semi-tragedy that happens in New Zealand, we have to make a tally movie about it.
Mm, yeah.
And my recollection is that the one that was made was sort of centred around New Zealand cricketers, probably male.
I, at this point, have no idea what you're talking about.
So apparently there were members of the New Zealand cricket team that were on that train and were killed.
Well, I find that intriguing because I just went and read all of the signs at the memorial and I didn't read anything about cricket.
Well, the
and I feel like I would have noticed.
The Tally movie starts out, was filmed at the Basin, but it starts out with a cricket game. Ryan O'Kane is in it. Cohen Holloway, I believe, is in it. There's a whole bunch, but it revolves around so certainly one.
Okay.
New Zealand cricket. God, this is going to be a long fact check for you, Jake. I don't envy you. And on the subject of fact checks.
Yes.
He fact checked a fact check that we had to do about did Cohen Holloway's character have a different name in Wellington Paranormal, the TV series, as the from What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes.
He did. Different name.
He wasn't Dion.
He wasn't Dion in the film. He was something else. You have to watch the fact check. I can't remember, but it was a weird name.
Or the film.
Yeah, don't watch it. Well, it's quicker to watch, you know, another view for Wellington Paranormal.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, but I will.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I wonder why that was. We should have asked Jermaine.
Why he changed his name to Dion?
Mm.
I don't know, but also.
Yeah.
What?
He also got, well, you go.
No. I was going to say you thought that Jermaine, his name was Dion Skits, but it was Dennis.
Well, that's interesting as well because it was Dion, but I didn't dare correct him because there's a couple of things I just sort of let go through to the keeper there. Yeah. But it was definitely Dion, and there was something else there.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, I know. It might have been the same thing. That's why I can't remember it because we've already said it.
Well, that's all done now then, isn't it?
Yep, pretty good.
What about you, Mike? What have you been up to as of late?
Man, I've got so many flies in my house.
That's nice.
I don't know what's going on. The neighbours got them as well, but there's a lot of like juveniles, like little ones. So they're coming from somewhere.
Causing all sorts of trouble.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. They're standing over people in the street. But like I'm talking
doing ram raids on your pantry
of flies.
So what's your solution?
Well, I had last year, last summer, which was the first summer we'd been in there, we had a spray dude come over.
Yeah.
And that did nothing. I've had one of those robo sprays put it. Yeah. That does nothing.
Yeah.
I rang up yesterday and spoke to a woman that runs a drain clearing company. And I said, it seems like they're around the drains. I'm out of ideas, to be honest.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, could that be it, to flies hang around drains? And she paused long enough that I knew that they didn't.
Yeah. But then she's like, good idea to get them cleared out.
Yeah, but she didn't say that. She said, I tell you what I do. I use this stuff that I use, and we spray it maybe once a month around all the surfaces, and it works incredibly well. So
what's
she
the
said,
stuff?
I'll let you know. We'll save it. We'll do a fact check on that one. Something, no more flies stuff, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I've got to spray that around inside and outside the house,
just
and we'll see how that goes. She used to be magnificent, but now that she's blind, it's become infinitely more difficult for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but God, they're just disgusting.
What you could do is get a pet frog.
That's a good idea. Or a Venus flytrap.
Yeah, I'm getting a pet frog on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for Melvin. Yeah.
What are you going to call it? What's he going to call it? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know if I'll let him choose the name.
Really? Even though it's his?
Well, it's ours.
Oh, it's yours now. Yeah, well, yeah. Who's going to feed it?
Well, probably me.
Yeah, it's yours.
Yeah.
Is it free?
Yeah. Jen, his other mum, grew it from a tadpole.
Really?
Yeah. But now it doesn't want the frog because we've got a bit. It's from where I used to work, the Early Childhood Centre. We've got a frog that's been there for about 17 years. And originally we'd grow these tadpoles, turn them into frogs, and then put them in with
throw them in the bin.
Robert D. That was the big frog's name, but he just ate all of the little frogs. It was quite good to watch, but
not great. No. Yeah. It's a bit of a jab of the hut situation.
It's like when we fed the tadpoles to the turtle. That was also quite good.
I think that's something that people used to do a lot of when we were kids.
Feed tadpoles to turtles?
Well, sure, but mostly grow frogs from tadpoles, you know? You'd sort of spend a bit more time.
It seems to be the only way you can grow them.
No, but if you know, as a pastime.
As opposed to growing them from kittens.
Yeah, that's right, but as a fun thing to do, you know? You go, oh, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And it was cheap.
And then you just let them all go in the garden.
Yeah, see you later. Today we're talking to Paul Yates.
I'm excited.
Are you?
Yeah. I love Paul.
So do I. Wonder if he's got a moustache at the moment.
Why?
Just wondering. Just for personal reasons. You know when you buy a new car and then you start seeing your car all over the place?
Yeah, like, yes, my now MG is everywhere.
Yeah, now that I've got a moustache, I'm seeing moustaches all over the place. It's like that. So, yeah, we're going to have a yarn to him, and then we'll come back and we'll have a yarn later. But from talking to Jermaine, it sounds like this, the Wellington Paranormal would never have happened without Paul Yates. They were just going to let it go through to the keeper.
Yeah. Well, I love that you've used that analogy twice in the space of about 3 minutes.
Have I?
Yep.
Okay. That's my new favourite saying.
Okay, great.
You could have said nothing. You could have let it go through to the keeper. Hey.
Yeah. I'm not that kind of person.
No.
Yeah, I think I've always thought that Paul was very responsible for the success / creation of
and yes.
making of, funding of, all of that stuff of Wellington Paranormal.
I agree. Just while we're on that story that Jermaine said, that I had not heard that story before when he said that within 40 seconds.
Yeah.
He turned the title and said, yeah, that's unreal, eh? That's good.
Jeez. Put that in a CV.
Put that in the CV, absolutely. All right, here's Paul Yates.
Hi, Paul. Nice moustache.
Right.
Do you want to say who Paul is in relation to the show? Just
Yeah, that's a good idea. who exactly is Paul Yates, Karen O'Leary?
To me or just like to the world?
To the world.
I'd say that to the world, Paul Yates is the producer and one of the writers of Wellington Paranormal. And he's basically the guy that got it off the ground, isn't he?
He
With
is.
With the help of Jermaine.
Yeah. And with some assistance.
And Tiger's name.
And Tiger's name. Yep. yeah. So according to Jermaine, after Paul Yates came along and saw a screening, an early screening of What We Do in the Shadows, Yatesy then went up to Jermaine and said, that should be a TV show, those cops. And Jermaine said, yeah, I reckon as well. And then that was all that Paul needed.
Yep.
He was off.
He's like a dog with a bone.
He was a dog with a bone for 3 years.
Yeah. It was a big bone.
It was a smelly bone. Got there in the end. But he is also
– Because did he already work with them in the New Zealand Documentary Board?
I don't think so. I think that was created
for
Paranormal. But, yeah, I sort of knew of him through his various works as a comedian, certainly with sketch comedy and stuff in the 90s. And then, yeah, once we met him, it was like you found out how much stuff he'd done.
Basically everything in New Zealand.
Pretty much everything. Yeah. So here's Paul Yates. So have you been listening to the podcast?
I have indeed. Loving it. A lot of things I'd forgotten, a lot of things I remembered, there's one thing you talked in the podcast about the ghost episode.
Yes.
And you talked about how wonderful Jermaine Clement was being the crochet blanket ghost.
And he's vying for some attention and praise here.
Not to insert myself into the narrative, but
this is what inserting someone oneself into the narrative is.
Yeah. I was also one half of the blanket ghost.
What half were you?
So the scene where you guys come down the stairs and
you went on the trolley.
I was on the trolley under said blanket ghost.
Oh, so you were actually the stunt ghost.
Yeah.
Not strapped onto anything, being pulled along by what was a fairly flimsy wire,
has
to be said. That was our budget. Most things were flimsy.
Producers didn't get enough money.
Yeah. No, they asked me, would you like a rope or a flimsy wire? And I was like, which one's cheaper?
Yeah. That's right.
Let's go flimsy. And that was what happened there. So I was one half of the blanket ghost. So.
Right, uncredited.
Yeah. Jermaine and I put our bodies on the line.
He got
terrible hay fever. I nearly died.
Yeah.
You nearly died.
Yeah.
Well, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit.
Well, certainly, yeah. It's funny, I don't remember that at all.
Right.
I vaguely remember that now.
Yeah, sure.
Jermaine was just on the bed blanket ghost, right?
Yeah. Well, the reason I remember him specifically was because I remember the heat of the room.
Yeah.
How long we were in the room. I think there was Atmos in your shot?
Yeah, there was a bit of smoke in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just how the hay fever was just streaming out of him. Even when we interviewed him, he was hay fevery, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But hay fevery.
He's not a complainer, though.
He's not a complainer.
He's one of those, no, I'm fine.
He's stoic.
I'm fine. He's very stoic.
Yeah.
And he has to have people aggressively telling him, you know.
You're not fine.
We need to get you something.
It was like when you got hypothermia on New Tuesday.
Right.
From going into the lake.
I'm fine,
but then you got hypothermia.
Scene.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he probably wasn't that fine.
Yeah.
It's probably really cold.
Yeah.
But, also, he seems to be susceptible to a lot of things at the same time, right?
Yes.
Getting hay fever, he's getting hypothermia. There's always something wrong with him. So he's just used to it. Like, that's just normal for him.
Susceptible to some maladies.
Yeah, that's right.
Jermaine.
Yeah,
but he's
yeah,
very
yeah.
stoic all people through it.
So yes.
He's a trooper.
He is a trooper, absolutely. So, yeah, it's been going pretty well, these yarns.
Yeah.
Remembering back to things.
Yeah. And it's not that long ago. It's amazing.
It feels like a long time ago.
The first series we shot in just before Christmas, 2017.
Yeah.
So what's that?
5 years.
8 years ago.
Yeah, 8 years ago.
Seven and a half.
Yeah. It's not a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're in 2024 now.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're in your 40s now.
What?
I'm in my late 80s.
And it's been quite good to go back through stuff because, like, I was going through our text messages, yours and mine.
Right.
You know, like you're my ex-partner and I'm going through for evidence of all the horrible things that you've said to me, you know. Right. But it's only been lovely. Nice. But going all the way back to those conversations where it's like, oh, you know, we're talking to TVNZ. Oh, it's going through to New Zealand on air. Oh, no, we're going to hold off.
Yeah.
It's such a stop-starty process.
And you've talked about this, but it is a long process getting a television program made. And I'm sure that's the same the world over because you're asking people for a lot of money to pay for your crazy, stupid idea. And,
yeah. You know, but I don't think you can speak for yourself, Karen, today.
Can
in
I?
This episode, we're going to let you speak for yourself.
Thanks, Mike.
But for myself, even though I'd been in a few things, I don't think I knew how long it took. When you guys were like, oh, do you want to be in a TV show? I was like, sweet, I'll clear my calendar for next month. When do we start? Hey, how did you feel?
I had no idea. So I had there was no precedent. So I was like, I just waited. But I did and I said this in one of the other podcasts. I was like, oh, they're obviously not making that television show. And I remember you saying to me, no, they haven't said no. And until they say no, then it could be a yes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And end of the day, when they, because we'd had the submission in and the network commissioner at TVNZ, Kathleen Addison, rang me and said, there's a small amount of money in the next round.
That's right.
Could you make Wellington Paranormal, for that? And I went, yep.
Absolutely.
$10, sure.
Yeah.
Sign me up. And so that's how it. And I knew that if I waited any longer, the iron wouldn't be quite so hot. So I struck. So it was tough the first series to make it on what it was, but I knew it was a great idea.
Yeah.
I knew I had two amazing people.
You did.
And Mike and Karen.
That's right.
Jermaine Clement, who's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
We were initially hopeful of having Tyker involved.
Seemed like he would be.
But I think it was 6 weeks before we were shooting, he rang me and told me that he'd been asked to direct Thor, which was like, and I thought he was joking.
Did you say to him at that point, priorities, Tyker?
Yeah.
I mean,
what's the budget of Thor?
Yeah. Oh, it's about
the same
200 million.
Well, about 150 million. For your Thor.
So he could have made 1,000 to 10,000 Wellington Paranormal series for the same amount of us.
Of course. So that was like, wow, who's going to direct?
But it was a slow process. We've talked about this before as well, but it was like, he's going to direct two episodes. And then it was, he's really buggered after doing Thor. Now he's going to do the last two episodes. Oh, the last one.
Yeah, there was
he's
a bit of,
do
is
it?
Yeah.
He's because too, if I remember, he was actually back in the country. He just couldn't be bothered.
I don't know if it was couldn't be bothered.
He was tired.
He'd made a big Marvel film.
And oh, yeah,
he was
probably
shattered. To be fair.
And the question that we ask everybody, Karen, that sits in that chair.
And it's quite a good question, and I think you'll have a really good answer for us, Paul. So the first question, the real question we want to ask you is, why acting?
Yeah, I gave that up a while ago. Clearly not very profitable, just telling you to.
Yeah, that's right.
And so after a while I was a writer as well, and I've been a jack of all trades. And you kind of have to be in this country. You have to be an early childhood teacher, an actor, a presenter, an award-winning
presenter.
Just saying.
An award-nominated actor.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's good.
Award-winning actor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
But it is. It's the country's so small that you kind of have to do a bit of everything, and it's a small community, and that's what I love about it, that there is a certain kind of community feel about it, especially in Wellington, I think.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that we made a show in Wellington called Wellington Paranormal with a couple of Wellingtonians.
Yeah.
Previously Wellingtonians.
Yeah. It's when I heard the name Wellington Paranormal, I was like, where have they got that from?
Yeah.
Don't get it. But now I love it.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
It's great. You probably talked about the crazy name options we had, ranging from Karen and Mike's Police Program.
Yep. Which had a real ring to it.
It had a great ring to it. And then was it Paranormal Event Response Unit?
It was that for ages, right till just before we.
It was. I think we went into production with that as the working title.
That's right, because I was doing these voice memos each day after rap. I'd do a 15-minute chat to keep myself awake, and I'd just record what happened in the day.
Yeah.
And at some point in there, it was decided that the name would become Wellington Paranormal.
Yeah. That was. I can 100% credit Jermaine and Taika. So we'd arranged to have a call. Taika by then was on his Marvel film, and so Jermaine rang in, and so that was like a three-way call, and it was sort of pre-Zoom, I guess. And there was someone who answered for him. You know, one of those people that goes, "We have Taika."
Oh, nice. Has he got one of those?
Yeah, he had one of those.
Always wanted one of those.
So we had a quick chat, and they said we wanted to have just a more cool tie in to Wellington, sound like one of those police shows like NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
Mm. And they said, "What do you think of Wellington Paranormal?" And I went, "Genius." Let's call it that.
Sweet.
Yeah. And that's the rest is history.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
All right. We'll see you later. But where did you grow up and what made you get into? Was it comedy driven or was it acting? Was that the thing?
Comedy.
Yeah.
So I started my career as a stand up comedian. I grew up in Palmerston North.
Yeah.
Very funny place in New Zealand.
It's the least funny place in New Zealand.
But that's funny in itself.
It creates funny people.
I think it does.
Because it's an inherently boring place. Palmerston North.
Like Levin.
That's where I'm from and I love I love Palmerston North. But I think there was a lot of people there who just wanted to make their own entertainment. And I was at university at the time at Massey trying to think, what the hell am I going to do with my life? And a guy called John Bridges, who you may know, who's Karen's producer on Paddy Gow Has Issues.
Lovely man.
He is a lovely man, and he was a mate who I knew, and he dragged me along to a Capping Review kind of rehearsal. And I met a whole lot of people just like me who thought they were funny and maybe weren't, and wrote sketch comedy and jokes.
Right.
And one of those people was Jeremy Corbett, get his name right.
Right.
And his brother Nigel, a guy called David Downs, who used to be very much involved in the comedy industry. Anyway, we formed a comedy group called Facial DBX, and we toured the country a number of times just doing sketch comedy. And at the time, Seinfeld was starting to be a thing. And we
was that about 93, 94?
Yeah, sort of early 90s.
Yeah.
And so we all decided we wanted to be those people that, you know,
so did you all work on like jeans and sneakers?
There was a bit of jeans and sneakerage, gotta say. And I'd like to apologise for that. but it was the early 90s.
Yeah.
Started from there and just got involved in TV. And then myself, John Bridges and David Downs got cast in a TV show in Wellington called Away Laughing, produced by the Gibson Group.
Right.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah. And that was our first foray into television. So we all graduated from uni.
Talk me through that audition process.
In our comedy group, there were five of us, and they rang us up and said, "Oh, we came to see a show, love it." Dave Gibson rang us up, who's the producer, and he said, "There's one guy in your group we really love, and we want to come up and audition him.
Right?
If you guys want to put on some sketches and stuff like that." And so they.
Who was the one guy?
A guy called. Lovely man and very funny. And he was just so nervous. And you can understand, producers coming to see him. We were all super relaxed, the rest of us.
No pressure on you. We're
going to make you look funny.
Yeah.
And so we put on our, you know, crazy
jeans and sneakers.
Jeans and sneakers and our Seinfeld comedy. And we put on a little show and got very nervous. And anyway, the next day he called up, Dave Gibson that is, called up me, called up David Downs, called up John Bridges, but not. Yeah.
Did that end your comedy group?
No, we were still friends and still did comedy and stuff. Yeah. But, we toured after that. Anyway, that was how we got auditioned. And when we sort of moved up to Auckland, I won't say we started a comedy scene. There was already a bit of a comedy scene, but we got more involved and we started doing regular nights at Kitty O'Brien's pub.
Oh, yeah.
Just by Victoria Park Market in Auckland. And that became a regular gig. It went from Wednesday nights to Thursdays as well, and then it became a whole running thing. Then we looked for a comedy club, and we asked the council, is there some building in central Auckland we can have? And they said, yeah, there's the Adult Cinema at 321 Queen Street. Could you guys please take over the lease? Because we don't like the fact that we're landlords to adult entertainment, shall we say. So in about 95, 96, a whole bunch of us put money in, and we got rid of all the evidence of the
What kind of evidence are we talking about, Paul?
Well, there were like those velour chairs from the 70s with sort of the little, you know, wooden arms on them.
Yeah.
And I won't – I guess if I was looking for an adjective, it would be crusty.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so we cleaned it out. They put a bar in, and that became the classic Comedy and Bar here in Auckland, which to this day is kind of the home of stand-up comedy. So we were sort of at the you know.
So you guys pretty much started there?
Pretty much. Well, it was a whole group of us. It was a whole group of really committed.
But you're saying that you're the main person.
Yeah, it was all me. No, there's a whole bunch of people.
People are not going to be happy about you taking all the glory, I tell you what.
Typical Paul Yates.
But it's, classic Yatesy.
It's now – see what you did there. It's now run by an amazing guy called Scott Blanks, who's been there from the beginning, and he's a legend. Runs that. If ever I'm looking for new writers or new sort of comedy people, I'll get in touch with Scotty because he watches all the sort of stand-up comedians coming through the classic ranks.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, full credit to him for maintaining what is a great, you know, birthing place for a lot of comedy in this country.
Did you get any of the Wellington Paranormal writers through that?
It's a good question, actually. I don't think we did in the end. Maybe subsequently. It's actually Corey Gonzalez. Corey Gonzalez McQuire, who, you know, he came through the classic as a stand-up comedian and he was great. But the first mix of writers on season one was reasonably eclectic. We were trying to get a good cross-section of just people. I hate working with groups that, oh, wow, we're a whole bunch of white guys, you know, because your comedy's just going to be kind of one note. So we got – there was – so we got three white guys. We got myself, Nick Ward, who I'd worked with a lot, Sam Smith, and then we got Melanie Bracewell. You might have told the story about how Melanie was discovered.
Found on Twitter.
Twitter. Yeah. And then Jermaine said, go find her. And so I went to see her comedy at a comedy club, and I had to be that guy that approached her after the show going, hi, I'm a producer. And, you know, she was inherently suspicious, understandably.
Yeah.
But no.
Do you know, I'm the one who started this place.
and she's just a legendary writer. She was very clever and ridiculously talented. I think she's only like 21 at the time, which is why it was inherently comfortable, me a kind of middle-aged dude. But she was incredible. And we also got a woman called Jessica Hansel, a.k.a. Coco Solid, who'd written an amazing animated series called Aroha Bridge, which if you can find it, it's genius. It was kind of like the more subversive version of Brotown.
Yeah, it was on Māori television, I think, originally.
Yeah, and so she was sensational and funny and obsessed with reality television. We were making a comedy show, but none of us really liked reality television. But Coco was like, oh, yeah, they wouldn't do that. No. More talking to camera. And so she was really cool. So the process, we went away to a house out in the country.
And Amanda as well, eh?
Yes. No, Amanda came on.
She's not actually the second season.
Second season, yeah. So, and from that we wrote the series. And Jermaine came in at the end and we sort of pitched our ideas to him, and that's his unique gift, is to take what are already, we think, pretty good ideas, and he would sort of elevate them and add little things to them that made them genius. And then we had YouTube bums interpreting it.
That's right.
You know, so it's a big collusion of cool comedy minds that made Wellington Paranormal what it is.
Yes. But also before you got there, you were also acting as well. Like you say, you've got to be a jack of all trades. So you were performing sketch. You ended up being in Skits, didn't you? Were you in Skits, which was another comedy series?
Yes, I was in the last couple
of series. Was that Gibson Group as well?
It was, yeah. So I was a bit of a Gibson groupie. I'd moved to Auckland prior to that, you know, trying to get work and that kind of thing. I was involved in a terrible television show called The Mad, Mad World of Television.
Is that clip based?
No, it was. I shouldn't really, you know.
Bag it, man.
It was hosted by the wonderful Simon Barnett.
Oh.
He's lovely.
Not Simon Barnett.
And it was like a Friday night entertainment show with sketches and comedy and music. And
Sounds good.
No, it was terrible.
No good.
Terrible.
Was it before he did Face the Music?
After.
Oh, yeah, after. That was good, wasn't it, Face the Music? Yeah.
Well, no,
yeah.
I didn't really like music. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You anyway. Hated it. It's mostly music, that show.
I like Top Town and Clash of the Codes.
Yeah,
I
want to bring those Top Town. Top Town.
Yeah, well, can we?
I think you should host it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. We'll pitch that tomorrow.
All right, done.
Yeah. Karen Top Town.
And so that was no good. And was there a reason why you specifically hated Simon? But they can't all be winners.
No, and it got canned after 15 weeks.
Right.
Basically, it was costing the network a fortune. Quick story. So we had this competition called Nissan Key Performer.
Oh,
and
that
so there was like a live component. We'd get someone out of the audience and they'd perform a task. Like one of them was we would hide a bunch of keys in Kelly Tarleton's underworld and they'd have to swim with the sharks to collect. Underwater world, whatever it's called. It was underworld. And find keys and they would try them in a car.
In a car, yeah.
So all of our – we had to give away a car every week for the first 4 weeks because the tasks were ended up being too easy. And by then, Nissan were like, we're going to pull our sponsorship.
Are you kidding me? That's magnificent.
So, we gave away all these cars.
Anyone get eaten by a shark? Was that a mistake? More sharks.
No, yeah, chuck in more sharks. Make it more dangerous.
Do you want a car or do you want to die?
Yeah. Did that show and then got offered skits and moved back down to Wellington.
Right.
Which is my where I love to be.
Yeah, and all through there you're sort of acting as well. You're probably represented as a comedian, a writer as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did all of that, whatever worked. And it was through the 90s when I had kids, was just a jobbing writer on a whole range of stuff.
Yeah.
I was creative producer on What Now. So I worked on What Now in the early 2000s.
I saw Jason Gunn at the airport yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Cool. He's lovely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You did Avatar.
I was in Avatar, humorously.
Yeah, tell us your Avatar yarns.
Oh, gosh.
Tell us your Jim Cameron.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I love that story.
Well, when I first got – so I was just asked to be a featured extra, which meant waiting in a tent for about 3 weeks.
Mm.
And I was writing for something at the time, so it was a chance to get double pay, just quietly. I shouldn't say that. Tax department would be on me.
Leave that bit in, Tim.
Yeah. And first time I got to see it, I was playing someone military, which is humorous for a start. I'm the least violent person I know. And I get to set and the AD says, oh, that's your science fiction-y workstation-y thing with holograms and shit. And there was like an art department guy. Yeah. There's an art department guy sitting there, you know, with like a tool belt on and had his back to me and he's obviously just polishing it up and looking at it. And I went, oh, I think that's where I'm supposed to be sitting. And the guy swiveled around on his chair and it was James Cameron.
Oh.
And it's like, hey, how you going? I'm Jim. And that's how I met James Cameron. I was like, oh, I really love your films. Yeah, I get that a lot. And, he proceeded to describe the whole philosophy of the set and, yeah. So that was quite an incredible experience, but I soon realised he's a very intense person, James Cameron.
Did he shout at you specifically, Paul?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I got a cue wrong at some point and I've had James Cameron say to me, what the fuck are you doing, Paul?
Can you do that in his accent?
Yeah.
Hey, what the fuck are you doing, Paul? And, yeah, that was kind of mortifying to meet someone who's a legend telling you, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
It's quite an existential, question, really. What am I doing?
Yeah. And I guess at the same time you're mortified.
Yeah.
But also it's quite good. You think, oh, I've got a story here for later.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite nice.
Always a silver lining.
Yeah, yeah, but you weren't the only person to get screamed at by Jim Cameron, were you?
No, there was a lot of screaming on that set. And hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast.
Big fan of this podcast. But I think he knows
he's been on record that there was a lot of shouting. I saw 5 different DOPs come and go.
Right.
On the first Avatar.
Yeah.
And then finally there was a guy, they came on, an American guy called, I can't remember his name, but Mauro Fiore. And he was a legend. And he just stood up to Jim Cameron and said, we'll do it this way.
He was the most magnificent American-Italian.
Yes.
He was the DOP on Training Day.
Oh, wow.
Which is what he should have won an Academy Award for.
That's an amazing film.
Yeah, and I picked him up for, because I was working on that as, I must have been a runner, and I picked him up. I was so old when I was a runner. It's like 2008. It's not that. Anyway, so I picked him up from the airport, him and the gaffer, Chris Cullerton, and somebody else. And when we came out of the airport, because we were just parked right outside at Wellington Airport, right in the taxi spot, you know. And so I came out of there and I jumped in the passenger seat.
Right.
Deliberately, because I knew that they would think, American brain, that the driver sits on the left-hand side.
Right, gotcha.
So then Mauro came round and he jumped into what is the driver's side of New Zealand, and he got in, he was like, what the fuck, man, what's going on? So little joke for you there, got out.
Nice.
Then reset that. And then I took them to a rugby league game, New Zealand against Australia at the Cake Tin down there in Wellington. And we lost 54-0.
Sounds pretty
good game.
Pretty really good game. They're like, I don't know why we're here. It's like American football, not really.
Yeah.
Is your job as a runner to take people to rugby league games?
I liked showing off Wellington and welcoming people to the city because I didn't know anything about it, you know.
Oh,
so
lovely.
I would take them out and about to various things.
Proud Wellington.
So you were like, proud Wellington. Runner just also means kind of like friend.
Yeah. But that was me more than the role,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
Mostly it was drinking, but there was some other things
friendship
involved as well. Yeah. What other Jim Cameron? Oh, Mahana. You're on Mahana. I was on Mahana.
Yes, I played a priest on Mahana. It was it's lovely. Working with Lee Tamahori is like, for a New Zealand actor at least, it's quite a sort of an honour. He's kind of amazing kind of character. But I had to do scenes with, you know, Tim Morrison and Jim Moriarty, who are like sort of legends of New Zealand cinema. And that was pretty sort of daunting.
Yeah.
And I had to do the start of a sermon, and I stuffed my lines up.
Oh, did you?
Which just happens, but there was a whole congregation of, like, you know,
believers.
The sort of, the godfathers and godmothers, the kaumātua of New Zealand acting, sitting there watching this Pākehā guy at the front make a complete tit of himself.
Yeah, that's a good time.
Yeah.
I think I was a runner on that one as well.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Nice. That
was
a lot of running.
A few years ago.
You got to stop running.
Well, actually, I was a runner on that, but at the same time I was riding the water cooler.
Ah, right.
I'd sort of be sitting around doing nothing. I'd just be like, can I go home? I'd just rather be doing the writing stuff.
And can we just do a little plug for the water cooler? Excellent work.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
We've found it, actually. It's on my Facebook page.
Yeah,
which I hadn't been on for years, so there you go.
Yeah.
And also a little scene show, Mortal Engines.
Yes.
In fact, did you have a weird facial hair in that?
I did. I grew a proper kind of
piratey beard.
Which Mrs. Yates was not a fan of.
No.
And I kind of just kept letting it grow, but it was the moment when I found quite a large chunk of a Cookie Time biscuit that had been there all day.
Yeah.
That I thought, probably not. Beard's not really the look for
Did me. Mrs. Yates like the beard more or your big moustache you had for fresh eggs?
Neither.
Yeah,
same Mrs. thing. Yates prefers me clean shaven.
And just for those people that were listening before you got here, Mike was wondering if you had a moustache now. And we can confirm that no, he doesn't.
No.
Because you grow a very good moustache.
Oh, it's not as good as yours.
No, I disagree.
Yeah.
So do
which
I.
is very, very good. Very, very good. Yeah. So I guess we should talk about old Wellington Paranormal. When Jermaine was here, he said that within 30 or 40 seconds of us doing our first take, he turned to Taika and said, this should be a TV show.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then how did you come to realize that we were so unbelievably amazing? we get guests in here to tell us how great we are.
Of course, yeah. You're great. Can we just move on?
Or
now? No. Jermaine called me up and I hadn't seen him in a little while, and I knew he'd been doing what we do in the shadows, and he said, "We've invited some mates to come and watch a cut."
Can I, sorry, unless I should have done this before, but how did you meet him? And I'm assuming you knew Tyker already as well.
I knew Tyker a little bit, but I mainly knew Jermaine through doing sketch comedy. He was on Skits.
Yeah.
So that's how I met Skits. And Jermaine and I got on really well, had similar kind of sense of humour, and we used to write stuff together.
Right. So now, did he have a character on Skits with a name starting with D?
Yes. What he had like it? The one I remember is a super nerdy character.
Yeah.
He did with who you guys know.
And we've got two options. I thought it was one, and then he said it was something else when we talked to him.
Something like Daryl or
– was it Dion or Dennis?
Dennis.
Damn it.
Definitely Dennis.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, okay.
I can't remember Mike's
I'll take character. A loss there.
Yeah. All but right. He was the classic, kind of
– very funny. Yeah. The haircut was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how I met Jermaine. And then I also worked on the pilot for the Flight of the Conchords show that was supposed to be a New Zealand kind of comedy thing. And so I worked with Brett and Jermaine. And so that's, so sort of off and on.
Did they get to pilot stage with that?
We made a pilot for that.
Whether they wanted it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing like the TV show. Everyone sort of goes, you made a New Zealand version of what they did in New York. It was nothing like that. We pitched an idea that was a comedy documentary about Jermaine and Brett being a band who had influenced every major genre of New Zealand music through the years.
Like
they'd just somehow been timeless and been there at the 60s and were part of the Howard Morrison Quartet.
Weren't there photos that had them photoshopped?
Yeah, we got hold of footage of Howard Morrison Quartet and put Jermaine and Brett on the end in little suits. And in those days, Howard Morrison used to make terrible kind of casual racist jokes.
Right.
And so we had all these, and you'd have Jermaine and Brett on the end going, anyway, cut together a pilot, and of course, like all great ideas in New Zealand television, rejected.
They got turned down.
Yeah. Go back and come up with something better.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of head banging, trying to get comedy shows up over the years. But Jermaine invited me to the screening for Mates of What We Do in the Shadows. I loved it, and when you two came on, I had the same kind of light bulb moment as the guys did. They obviously had the first light bulb. Second light bulb was like, those two should be in a show. One of those cop reality shows with cops going, "So I've just arrested the guy." That was what appealed to me. So afterwards they were like, "What do you guys think of the film?" And a whole lot of comedy people, "Oh, I thought of this, this and this." And I was like, "Can those two guys be in a TV show?" And Jermaine and Tyker were like, "We were hoping you'd say that."
Yeah.
Because you're a bit of a TV producer,
right? Yeah.
So that's how it came about.
Yeah, and Jermaine very much said that if it wasn't for you getting involved at that point, it would never have happened, because it was just one of those things like, that'd be a good TV show. And they probably, God knows how many times a day they say that.
Yeah.
And so and Jermaine said that they regarded you as somebody that would get things done.
Yeah.
So that's what you did.
It took a while, but luckily I have a soft head to bang up against those doors that tended to keep closing. But having those, by then Jermaine and Tyker were pretty kind of hot property.
Yes.
So it was a relatively straightforward pitch. But as you guys know, the initial pitch wasn't a paranormal show. The initial pitch was to have you guys in a generic small town cop reality comedy, which was Karen and Mike's Police Program. And then as we talked through it, we realised the paranormal aspect of What We Do in the Shadows, which was, getting really popular, was what worked for them. So Wellington Paranormal.
Because you think that the paranormal stuff helps provide like quite a funny contrast to us as police officers, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In hindsight, that was exactly my next question.
Is it?
It was exactly it.
Look, I've asked that.
Yeah.
Taking my questions.
I think what...
I just made that up.
What you two are so great at is nailing that deadpan New Zealand sense of comedy and humour with its understated. What paranormal stuff does is provide an extreme thing in the background for you guys to be reacting to. That somehow makes it funny. The smallness of the reaction to the most extreme thing, ghosts, monsters, that's what it seemed. We just lucked onto an amazing little comedy genre. Probably other people have done it. But
and I think if you were just going to do a regular cop show that was set in a small town, if everybody is then very Kiwi and everybody is very small, then everyone's been very small and dry against each other.
So it's kind of one joke.
Yeah, you lose that.
Whereas paranormal, there's
got
so
two
many,
jokes.
There's so many genres. Yeah, exactly. There's so many genres of paranormal stuff that you can have in the background.
Yeah.
And that was the thing we kind of lucked onto.
Yes.
And you guys just going, so behind me, there's a giant, you know, bird, funny.
Yes. That's right. I vaguely remember Rob Magasiva.
Yep.
Was potentially going to be the studly other local cop.
Ah, yes.
And, or was it him and or
and Siobhan Rakeri?
No, it was not. Robbie Magasiva was definitely in the mix. The idea there'd be like a Sarge, you two, and two other cops.
That were good.
And the idea was Robbie Magasiva was like a, you know,
hot,
hunky, beautiful, you know, Polynesian officer. And there was another cop who was very kind of gung-ho that was sort of annoying.
Right.
So it was going to be a four-piece. That was the idea. Right. But in the end, thought, why have that? Why just focus on you two? That's the funny bit.
Yeah, and I think later on there was an idea.
And Mike is also quite good looking and muscly.
Well, I think, to be fair to Rob.
Yeah. Karen, we didn't actually discuss that at all.
Just but later on there was an idea for a show where either we'd go to Auckland or there would be two Auckland cops that came down, and I think that had been earmarked as Rob and Siobhan Rakeri.
Yeah, Siobhan Rakeri. The idea was that two perfect Auckland cops who are
two hotties, know,
beautiful, muscly, great at their jobs, work with you two bums, and then you two discover that they're actually robots.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And there's someone in Petone who's making
it was in Petone. That's right.
Yeah. We just love the idea that it was a factory in Petone with some old dude. Yeah, just making some robots out the back. They're quite good, aren't they? Obviously.
And the old Griffin's factory.
Yeah, it's a goodie. There's still a lot of ideas around.
There's quite a few ideas around.
Now, can you take us through the casting process for, let's start with Marker.
Yep.
And then we'll go into Sainzo, which has got a good yarn around it I never tire of.
So Marker was a suggestion of Jermaine, kind of via Brett, because Brett had made the film Two Little Boys. Mm. And I don't think we looked at anyone else. I think it was always going to be Marker. And I think he had put something on tape and we're just like, yeah, he's great. He just nailed that whole senior police officer with mana who was funny and, yeah, that was easy.
Yeah.
I think you've told the story about Tom.
Just before we move off, Marker, I think you met Marker on Girl versus Boy.
Correct. So I did know him, you know, and was like, yeah, this guy's great. Lovely man, funny.
Yeah.
Really good actor, as we know. Really
toy
good
trained.
Actor.
Very talented.
He is a very, very good.
He's the real deal.
He is.
Is it true that he asked if he could grow a moustache, but someone said, no, you can't?
I thought I could grow a moustache. And I think probably then it would have seemed a bit cheesy, but copy.
Yeah, sort of copy.
But he's like, but I was also on Girl versus Boy.
Oh, were you?
Oh, yeah.
Were you a runner?
No, I wasn't actually. Incredibly.
Someone's friend.
Because I was in my mid-30s at the time.
Were you a police officer?
No, right? I was, it was Carly Nemia got me on.
Yep.
And it was a non-speaking part.
Right.
And it gave me my best credit that I've ever had.
Yeah.
And that was creepy older guy at party. Creepy older guy at party.
Didn't you kind of play that same kind of character in Educators?
In everything I do.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're not a cop, you're a creep.
Yeah. I'm a creep, yeah. Cops and creeps.
Or just creepy old cop.
Yeah, creepy. Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
And then Tom, Sainzo.
Yeah. Well, as you guys have sort of told the story, we love Chris Parker, who was also on Girl versus Boy. Extremely funny guy. We had on the show Girl versus Boy, which is probably about 10 years ago now, it was about a group of teenagers living in a fictional suburb of Wellington, and there was two Swedish exchange students.
Abby Damon.
Abby Damon was one of
them. Magnificent.
Hilarious woman, very funny. And she had a brother on it called Olaf, I think. But we decided to make him mute, which was a complete waste of Chris Parker's talents because he's one of the funniest men in the country. But he stole every scene he was in.
Just mugged away, did he?
Being a mugging mute it up. Swedish guy because he's got that beautiful blonde hair and tall and Nordic, and he was hilarious. So I've always liked Chris and his comedy, and Jermaine does too, and we thought, yeah, let's have Officer Parker, who is going to be the kind of wannabe, you know, sort of junior cops who wants to be you guys, was always the idea.
So was it just pure chance that Parker rhymes with Marker?
It was, yeah.
Lucky though, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's you know, just on the name alone, there should be a spin-off show.
Yeah, absolutely, Marker there and should, Parker, yeah.
Which would be great.
And so then you auditioned.
We decided we'll just do some open auditions for that role and just other cops, you know, generically. And I knew of, I don't think I'd ever met Tom, but I'd seen his online, you know, by then his, you know.
Snapchat stuff.
His Snapchat stuff was pretty popular.
Yeah.
He was funny. Jermaine loved him and said, oh, we've got to get this guy on. And so he did an audition, and it's not that it was any better. It wasn't a quality thing with Chris, because Chris was funny, but the character that sort of Tom created was more the kind of humble, low status, lovely wannabe cop, which Chris is sort of taller and more strident, and it sort of fitted the comedy of the character a little better.
Yeah.
But we always felt shit about it.
Not shit enough to change the name.
Yeah, no.
Let's just keep the name Parker. Yeah. And just every time he sees the show, he's reminded of what could have been. Did he know that it had been named for him? Or
Yes, he did.
Oh my God, that's a kick in the guts.
So
that's a shocker.
He was lovely. I rang him. Of course I didn't. I rang Chris and said, oh.
I heard you texted him.
No, not true.
No, Paul's a ringer. He doesn't text people.
Yeah, no. Call Chris. And he was like, and he's got that lovely kind of Chris Parker voice. He said, no, I totally understand. And it's great that at least Holmes got it.
Yeah. And I think he's genuine about it as well.
Yeah, they're great mates and love each other.
Karen would have been furious. She wouldn't have spoken to me. God knows how long.
What, if you've got my...
If I ever got Parker's role.
So, yeah, that's how that happened. And it was great in season 4, was it, to get...
Yeah.
Chris on as Tom's partner and call him Officer Sainsbury. So.
Yeah. And that was the biggest sort of most copy part of the show.
Yeah.
This one, and we were nowhere near
it. You'd spend so much money on people jumping out of helicopters, all sorts.
Yeah. They had a great little 80s cop kind of.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Seeing those two in the full armed defender squad, that's funny. Because knowing that Tom and Chris are the total opposite of action cops. As people, that was funny.
And how did you feel about the reaction to it? Because it's all well and good making something like this. You think, oh, hopefully it goes good in New Zealand. But to have it then sold.
It was a surprise, I think. I think anyone working in comedy in New Zealand.
Well, how many TV shows had you worked on at that point that had been canned and
numerous,
everybody bagged and all that sort of stuff? Not because of you, because of Simon Barnett mostly.
Maybe there's a theme. I was involved in most of them. You certainly don't expect international success, but if you make something locally that's popular, that's kind of cool. If some of your mates come up and go, oh, it was quite a good show, great.
Yeah.
Wow, that's your huge success. And I guess it was the first experience I had of social media, really. I mean, everyone had kind of been on Facebook for a while, but I went on Twitter. And so when the show first went to air in New Zealand, that was the first time I got Twitter and started to see some of the reaction to it, which is great. Normally you get ratings and you don't know what they mean. Oh, you got 12%. You're like, so what? But this was actual New Zealanders initially going, hilarious, love the show. And that was great.
Mm.
After working so long in comedy to get something that people actually laughed at and enjoyed, and it was across the board, eh?
Kids
loved it, and old people said, love it. So that was cool.
Yeah, and it was like every time a new episode came out, Wednesday was 8:30.
Nice.
It would trend number one in New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to have something trending based on something that is screening on television in this era. It's sports. Sports is the only thing that does it. You don't trend off a TV show because people watch it whenever they want, but every single week it would trend number one in the country.
Yeah.
And what has been so incredible about it all the way through, I think, is that it's from top to bottom all the way through, every single comment is positive.
Yeah.
There has never been like, this show sucks and people just getting in there and bagging it. Everybody has been positive about it. I've never seen that with anything. On earth, let alone a TV show.
It seemed to be I think because it is so understated. It's not trying to be anything it's not. And it's funny. It's got jokes. Jermaine's amazing gift is to make sure there's at least, you know, 5 jokes per page.
Mm.
And so in the edit, we're joke, make sure it's actually funny. And people just, yeah, they just latched onto it and loved it. And I think the key part of the hook, there are so many cop shows on television that straight away you see 2 cops talking to you on camera. You're there. You kind of get it.
Yeah.
And Police 10/7 shows like that are already funny because New Zealand cops are so
that's right. Yeah.
Understated about everything. You know, we've seen obviously a terrible crash here.
Yeah.
There's obviously multiple injuries. Ambulance on the way. You know, they're just you know, no excitement. Whereas American shows, oh my God.
Yeah.
And that's what and we'd lucked on to that's the New Zealand sense of humor.
Yeah.
For years working in New Zealand comedy, they'd always go, oh, we're not very funny, are we? You know, we can't laugh at ourselves. You know, and what we found was that, no, we are funny. What's funny is how understated we are. We think Aussies can be dry. New Zealand's way drier.
But I think, but that was the thing, right? Because all the way through 80s, 100% the 90s, we were New Zealanders trying to be British or were New Zealanders trying to be American. And that was, it just never connected in New Zealand. But really what I think Jermaine, Brett and Taika gave us was they discovered – what our humour is.
100%.
And then since then, everyone's going, oh, yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. We're a young country.
Yeah.
So to discover that and then to be able to go Breaker Uppers and obviously everything that Taika's done and Shadows and all of these things, but everybody now understands that we all connect to that kind of understated, don't talk yourself up.
Yeah. It's just the understated. What they discovered was just the small – conversational things about small shit.
Yeah.
It's funny in a certain circumstance. And Taika's made a career out of that. Yeah. He gets Thor, but Thor talk, you know, the conversations between the characters are all dumb and stupid little things. That's funny.
Yeah.
Again, small reactions to big things.
Yes. Yeah. Bloody good. I think we're going to leave it there unless you got something there, O'Leary. Because we're going to get you back to talk about the writing side of stuff.
Sure.
Because I wanted to have yarns about the writer's room and how all that works.
Yep.
As well.
Nice.
Can I just quickly, I just was going to ask, while you were talking about, obviously when it started to become popular in New Zealand, then how quickly after that did people from overseas show interest, or did you make them show interest by saying, look at this?
There was a gap, and that was a legal gap actually, because Jermaine and Taika sold the rights to what we do in the Shadows to HBO to make the TV show, or to Fox, sorry, FX channel. And we had legal, you know, they were actually a little bit annoyed because that was in development while we were doing Paranormal. And FX were like, oh, we don't like the idea that you're doing another spin-off of the same property, even though it was totally different, you two and none of the other characters. So they sort of said, could you not sell it internationally for 2 years? And so we were prevented from selling it. We were allowed to sell it to Australia. So they just said, keep it to Australia.
According to America, that's part of New Zealand anyway.
Just that place down south. So there was literally 2 years where we couldn't sell it. And then our agent in the States, and we also had lovely Cathew Neal, producer and genius. He had some contacts in Britain to get us a distributor. And so we started to sell it and it just sold massively. And we got on HBO Max in the States, as you know, and the CW channel. About 110 odd channels around the world that we're on.
Right.
And when you get out like that, the response on social media just, I mean, you guys have seen it. It's, you have someone from Idaho going, oh my God, I love that show. I don't know why they made, I
don't know why they're talking like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They moved.
Yeah.
Because I remember as well, like early on, remember that you found that dubbed Russian version.
Typical Russians to pirate you
but
guys.
But it was done in like 3 months. It was done so quickly. Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah.
And you could hear Bruce the British.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
They were from Idaho.
Yeah. They were from Idaho. But got to say, the next best to English, to you actual guys, French.
Right.
If you get the chance to watch Wellington Paranormal in French.
I think you showed me a bit. Yeah. I've never sounded as sexy in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paranormal. Brown hair. Hilarious.
We should try and find that clip for socials.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. Bloody beauty. I think that's it, eh?
Oh, look, it's been an absolute pleasure, Paul.
You're plugging anything, man? What are you plugging?
I've just finished producing season 3 of a very different television show called Under the Vines.
Yes.
Very popular amongst our sort of older audience.
Are you in the cut and you're in the edit for that?
Yep. Just, yeah, in the process of editing, soundpost and all that kind of thing. So that's coming on TVNZ about the middle of the year, June, July, something like that. So that's the main thing I'm busy on at the moment. But yeah.
Then Top Town.
Top Town starring, you know, presented by Karen O'Leary.
Yeah.
Question, what's happening with Wellington Paranormal?
I thought I'd escaped without that question.
That was close.
Yes. And you're possibly making reference to a little comment that popped up on social media.
That's right.
I think that's what happens.
That went unanswered.
Yeah. I think that's what happens when, you know, it's midnight and you have a very large glass of wine.
Yeah, sure.
And, you're saying it was a mistake.
I wouldn't say it was a mistake. It was a gauge of opinion.
Sure.
Shall we say. but certainly very keen to push to make another season of Wellington Paranormal.
Yep.
We're going to recast the two leads.
Thank you, Paul. That's all we've got to
recast
for.
Younger.
Yeah. but, yes, we would love to do it again, and there are certainly conversations underway to try and make that happen.
Yeah, good.
But nothing firm yet.
Yeah.
I'm happy with soft.
But if anyone online hears this and wants to start up some form of petition.
Yeah.
We give you permission for your petition.
Yeah, hashtag related probably.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hashtag what?
Just do a hashtag. What will we do? You can start it here now.
Well, I don't really understand how hashtags
Renew Wellington Paranormal.
Hashtag
that'll do.
Bring WP back.
Oh, yep. Nice.
See, actually, good one.
Yeah.
I reckon if we
bring
get like
back, that's rugby related. Yeah. That's what you did.
We get like 10,000 signatures.
Oh, we can
get signatures or tweets.
Or tweets,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
however,
yeah,
it works,
good.
Mike. Yeah.
What are they called when they're on X's?
X's.
Kisses.
Is that what they're called?
Kisses.
Yeah.
Crazy. Let's do it.
All right, Bloody beauty. We're on the job.
Righto.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye. That was nice, wasn't it?
Always a pleasure.
A little bit of
Yatesy.
Yeah. He is a lovely man. But we are absolutely going to get him back to talk about the process, probably in a little bit more detail around how you get a show up, pitching, which will only be relevant for people in New Zealand, but pretty interesting for people overseas. Or you can just skip the episode if you're going to be like that. Forget about it.
No, well, they didn't say that.
Don't even listen to it.
No, they're going
to
listen to it. No,
we won't
it.
Even make it.
What? We will make it. It'll take 3 years.
It'll take 3 years, that's right. And we won't have much money for it. But, yeah, and then the writing process and how a writing room works. And then a bit of the post process as well, which will be good for people to learn. And then how you sell a show.
That'll be good for people to learn.
To learn as well. There'll be so much learning.
I'm just all about
so
every day's a school day, you know?
Yes. So bloody good. Lovely to chat to him. I really, it's been too long since I've seen him. You can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, respectively. Now, what you can watch these episodes. I just want to drill that in on YouTube.
Because if people you think listening to us is good, you should try watching us.
Where do you see this T-shirt I'm wearing? people are constantly surprised that we're doing it on YouTube, but we are doing it on YouTube.
We're not doing it on YouTube.
YouTube, at Wellington Paranormal, the podcast. TikTok, at Wellington Paranormal Pod. Instagram, at Wellington Paranormal Podcast. My socials are Mr. Mike Minogue on both Instagram and X/Twitter. I've got a radio show at Hodaki Big Show. You can also listen to a podcast of that wherever you get your podcasts. Karen's socials are at Karen O'Leary NZ, and that's on Instagram, and also Officer O'Leary on X.
Yes.
You do peruse there. You're sort of hanging around there.
I lurk around.
I see you lurking. fuck that guy. You can leave fuck that guy in, but no one will know what we're talking about. He's a fuckwit, isn't he?
No shit.
Okay. We'll see you on the next episode. Enjoying this show, man.
I'm loving it.
Oh, it's
obviously,
really
you know,
fun.
Hanging out with you is always a joy.
It is.
But us talking.
It's good, isn't it?
It's lovely for us.
Righto.
See ya.
Frank Podcast.